Less Than Bang is a show by and for young and attractive web people. We talk about code, web, and life in this industry. The show is hosted by Paul Adam Davis and Tom Ashworth. It's episode zero, our first episode, and the topic this week is a coder's New Year's resolutions.
And mine's gone blank.
What did you say? Your mind's gone blank.
Yeah, which actually kind of brings me on to my first New Year's resolution, actually. I haven't made a definitive list of them or anything, but one of the things I wanted to do was just speak and talk better, write better. He says saying that in the worst way possible, but
yeah, write better.
Anyone who's
write betterer,
yeah,
more better.
Anyone who's met me in person knows I have quite a strong stammer, and that'd be great if I can try and get rid of that. I've had it fairly seriously for the last 4 or 5, maybe 6 years or more. And that is, I can't imagine not having it. So being able to get rid of that would just be pretty life-changing.
Do you know where that comes from, stammer?
My dad has it as well, so I get that from him.
Right.
And my brother has it quite bad as well.
Right. That's interesting.
So,
yeah,
yay genes.
Yeah, I mean, the speaking stuff is something I'm trying to do as well, just, talk more. But the screencasts I'm doing at the moment are really helping that. They're sort of stopping me from saying, although... Having said that, I've already done it a couple of times, but they do make you slow down and think about what you're saying. So instead of, if you can't think of something to say, instead of just going, you just stop and make sure that what you're saying is what you intend to say. And it does create this slightly odd, maybe a little bit broken speaking style, but at least you aren't annoying people by saying, there was a talk at a conference I went to, and I won't name drop anything, but, mention the person's name, but they went the whole way through, and I had to leave the room because I couldn't stand listening to the guy speaking. I'm just trying as hard as I possibly can to avoid that, and yeah, the screencast is doing it, but I suppose speaking live you get the same thing. You have to make sure you're not standing there saying but when you're doing it, you don't even notice because you're probably nervous and worried how you're coming across and everything else, and you just don't even notice what you're saying. I think some other people have kind of nervous tics when they're speaking, don't they? And they say stuff like you know and okay and all things that you probably want to avoid.
Yeah, my nervous tics tend to range in the way of not being able to say a word that starts with a particular letter. Like, it just reminds me of my first day of college. The teacher was doing the register, and I couldn't say my name because it began with one of those letters that I sometimes struggle with.
And that's awful.
My friend next to me had to say my name for me.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah. On day one of a new school, no one knew me. That's great. Have you got any more? Any non-speaking, listening, writing-related resolutions?
Well, it's kind of the same one of yours. It's the TDD. It's a process and stuff like that. It's having. Well, I was actually thinking about this last night, and I'm not sure that TDD is explicitly the resolution. It's more that to make sure I'm at least writing automated tests for my code, even if they don't come first. Making sure that I have some way of knowing if and when I break something. Because I've had a problem before with things I've built where I'll do something and do all the tests that I can think of, but manually, and I'll miss something and it will turn out that I've broken it or that there's a problem that, will cause disaster when it goes into production. I'd like to implement some tests or start writing tests to make sure that doesn't happen again. Because it does kind of give you that feeling of security about what you've written and you can, be confident the work you've written is not going to fuck up when it's in production. Oh, there we go, first swear word, woo! But yeah, I stole that TDD resolution from you. Why do you want to do TDD?
Well, I mentioned TDD just as an example of something that is kind of focused on what we do day to day. But the sort of work I do, it isn't really, really relevant. I mean, how can you add TDD to a WordPress theme? So, there's some small bits I add to the back end, but it hardly warrants adding a test suite and all of that stuff to it. But there are some things that I want to build this year that I guess we'll talk about next week where tests would really help it. So I'd like to get, you know, some more advice and stuff from a few people on that. But
well, have you got any experience with testing and testing frameworks and stuff?
Other than watching a few videos and knowing that the test suite and all the test files usually sit in another directory, yeah, that's as far as my knowledge goes.
Because I've spent time sort of doing TDD. I mean, a client project I started not long after I started my new job, I kicked that off with basically doing TDD. I wrote tests first and, you know, I was building modules out with tests as I wrote them. And then it got to the point where once you start doing UI stuff, tests become a little bit more difficult to do. And it's still possible and there's still strategies for dealing with that, but they do get a little bit more complicated. And it sort of petered out and I stopped doing them, which I was sort of disappointed that I did. I wish I hadn't. I wish I'd kept going with it. But now it's got a little bit too far and there's, you know, I probably tested five or six, well, maybe four or five modules of what is now maybe a 10, well, it's an MVC application, so there's maybe 10 models and maybe 15 or 20 views, and I would have to test all of those. Well, the models are arguably controllers as well, so there's sort of 10 of those, and then the views, and that just got a little bit too much. Because I was just trying, you know, I always find there's a problem with dealing with just building it as opposed to building it right. So sometimes I find myself getting frozen in trying to do it right when really what I should be doing is just doing it. And that's sort of a symptom of premature optimization. It's kind of, I need to do this the best, using the best practice first. And I do my best to avoid that, but sometimes I think I need to do TDD, and then I get hung up on the fact that the test framework doesn't work the way I want, or I can't get it set up properly, or I can't think of a test to write, or actually I don't quite know what it is I'm going to implement first. And then testing gets in the way. And sometimes I find I can just get more done if I forget about the testing and start writing it, and maybe worry about the test later on.
It sounds a bit like a symptom of trying to keep up with, well, not keep up with all the cool kids, but, you know, to try and do things the best way we can from the start. Mm. Like, if we were to start a new project now, incorporating all of the cool things that we should really be doing, we would add in TDD from the start. We'd probably add in a HTML precompiler as well as CSS, as well as JavaScript. We would have some sort of auto-deployment set up. We'd have some sort of module system like Grunt or whatever language you're using. And all of that shit can just really get in the way when you just want to build stuff, can't it?
Mm. I mean, I think maybe it's a case of learning your tools. I mean, Grunt, for me, got in the way to begin with a little bit, but now I'm over the hill and Grunt's I just add it to every project where there's less or you know, minification or whatever involved. It's just there on everything. And now they've moved to this slightly different way of doing it. It's got in the way a little bit again, but I'm sure it'll sort itself out. It seems like some of the documentation, just using Grunt as an example, is now a little bit inconsistent. And so, just like the problem we had the other day with the website for this podcast, where it, you know, the version I had was different from the version you had, and even when you installed it, it was still wrong. And it's just that those kind of things, yeah, they do get in the way. But I think you just have to learn a tool and then learn it inside out, which is actually a problem I've always had, is I've dabbled a bit too much in lots of different stuff, and rather than, you know, learning the arse off anything. But yeah, I mean, stuff like TDD from the start can get in the way, but I guess if you get used to it and really know what you're doing and you know, have like a little boilerplate for yourself that where everything's already set up and you know it really well and you know exactly where to go, then maybe you start to get much more productive. And it's about having a little bit less productivity for the first, you know, X hours, and then for the rest having increased productivity so that it pays for itself, you know, and maybe by the end of the project or in a couple of projects' time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I was thinking about the keeping up with the cool kids. There is an aspect of that, but then wanting to do the best practice from the start, I don't know, I feel like I always have a responsibility to do the to do it like the best way that's, you know, the best way that I can do right now. I see the argument for it, but I don't always subscribe to the idea that you like just do it the way you know, just get it done, because it doesn't really matter, because it kind of, I feel like it should matter. I think if what I'm doing is like a, it's like a craft or a, you know, if I'm building something for someone, then I have responsibility to do it the absolute best way I can. And so it's worth spending some time researching that and picking a tool or a process or something that will work best for that particular example. I mean, you know, a good example is all the different JavaScript, client-side JavaScript frameworks, you know, Backbone, Ember, Angular, or just, you know, roll your own. And there's multiple other ones as well. So actually, I've used Backbone and Angular on real, you know, live projects. And I think they're just useful for different things. I mean, I find Angular great for really rapidly prototyping stuff. But there's a problem. The problem with Angular is the documentation isn't great. So if you don't already know it inside out, you can get stuck for, you know, an hour maybe trying to do something that if the documentation were better, you'd be able to do. So at that point, you start wondering, well, is this actually the best tool I could have picked? I mean, even though I got the core of this application running in 10 minutes, but now I'm spending an hour doing something that's a little bit more complicated. That's quite common, I've found, with Angular. Whereas with Backbone, you might spend a little bit, you know, you won't be able to get something up and running in 10 minutes, but you gain maybe a little bit more over the long term. But I suppose it's just a trade-off. It's about, you know, you have a toolbox of tools. Like, if we're just talking about client-side JavaScript stuff, you have the toolbox of all those I've mentioned, and you just have to pick the right one for that specific specific job.
Yeah, I have used Angular in the past for a little prototype for Codery I was doing, but I got to a point a couple of days into working on it where you know, I was stuck on something and couldn't find any help. Looked on Stack Overflow, nothing there. I think I asked you couldn't help either. And I just thought, fuck it. I just wrote it in my own, you know, JavaScript from scratch, and it worked. Mm. You know, it took me two or three times as long as it would have done if I was using a framework, and I knew that framework. But I guess there is one plus side of just rolling your own stuff all the time, is that you tend to learn more about the language you're writing in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, actually. I do sometimes say and think that if you're doing something you've never done before, the best way to do it is to do it completely manually first time, and then you'll understand where the frameworks that try and solve that problem for you are coming from and the trade-offs that are involved. You know, if you say you're new to MVC applications, or you're new to, you know, you want to build a blog in PHP, you could go straight to WordPress. And actually, that's in the case of a blog in PHP, that's probably the best option. But it is, you know, might be worth, if you're a developer looking to build blogs for people, build your own thing, build something completely from scratch, you know, where you do the database and you do the, you know, all the views, and you arrange how posts get added and edited and updated and comments and everything like that, and you implement the whole lot and get a really thorough understanding of what the different ways that you could do that are, so that then when you come to look at the ways other people have solved that problem, like WordPress and other frameworks, you know, Cake PHP or CodeIgniter or all those other ones, you come to those with an idea of where they were coming from when they were built and why the authors did it the way they did it. And I think that's really useful to be able to look at something and understand why it is like it is, rather, because I suppose you could start using a new framework and get really angry because it didn't work quite the way you had in mind. But if you then you have to realize that there's probably a good reason why it's like that, and that there's a trade-off. You know, you do it one way and you get what you gain in some areas, you lose in others.
Yeah, it reminds me of the other day I was talking, Jonathan Snook posted, he fixed something on his blog, and it prompted me to ask him what he was using to manage his content, and he rolled his own blog system in 2001 when there was basically nothing else that was any good. So I thought that was just quite interesting that he was using his own blog as a platform to learn, in his case, Cake PHP. Mm. So there is no back end for it other than PHP MyAdmin, and everything is just bespoke. Mm. So he used that as his learning platform.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that sounds exactly the kind of thing. I mean, I actually think a blog in PHP is a rite of passage for any
yes.
probably WordPress developer or PHP developer. I mean, I've built my fair share. We had to do it at university, actually. About this, just before Christmas last year, I was building a blog system in PHP, which was a massive, like, oh, God, not again. I mean, of course, a lot of people hadn't done it before, and not being web people, not surprising, but, you know, I decided to go a little bit further with it, and I added Markdown and stuff like that, which was pretty fun, and it was quite fun to build, and it's actually, I have used it on other projects, the kind of core that I built, I've tweaked and used again, but now I don't really write PHP, I don't write any PHP. That was my sort of New Year's resolution last year, was to never write any PHP ever again.
And how did you succeed on that?
Well, not long after that, I got a job at Buffer as a PHP. Well, my job title was PHP developer, although I mostly wrote JavaScript, so it was okay. But there was a little bit of PHP involved, unfortunately. But I actually realized that my reasoning for not writing PHP has changed. I still don't want to write PHP, but the reason at this point was, oh my god, I hate PHP. Oh my god. You know, complain, I don't like it. It's a mess, blah, blah, blah. Now the reason is that I want to focus on JavaScript. I want to be a JavaScript developer. I've got to the point where I found the thing I want to master, and that's JavaScript and client, and to some extent server-side JavaScript, so Node.js, but mostly client-side JavaScript. And basically I just want to get, you know, as good as I possibly can at that, and then have a look at something else. And if I say to people, oh yeah, I can do PHP, then I'm sort of diluting my attention. Maybe that's actually another New Year's resolution for this year, would be double down on the top down. Is that what Obama said? Something like that. Double down on the writing JavaScript, you know, in everything. I mean, I sort of am anyway, but just making sure.
Yeah, I think if I had a language-based resolution, it would be to learn another language. I mean, I'm pretty competent in PHP. I said there's not much I can't do, but, you know, to be something that throws me one day, but yeah, you know, I'm competent enough in it to do anything a client wants me to. But I would really like to learn either Node or Ruby or even Python. I'm not sure, but just another language.
I think learning a new language is a really great thing to do. Actually, I wrote a blog post about it. Actually, I think trying something new, learning something new, is a really good way to extend your skills in your kind of native language. So if you learn Ruby, you might spot things, or actually in JavaScript, another good example, you might spot things you can do in PHP or bring ideas from those languages into your PHP that you wouldn't have done before. I mean, you know, before I knew about anonymous functions and stuff in JavaScript, where you can, you know, just create a function pretty much anywhere you like and pass them around, I never ever would have done that in PHP. And then after getting some JavaScript experience, I then started trying to do that in PHP, and PHP is not so great for doing it, although I think the newer versions do let you do that a bit better. But it just opened up this whole different way of you know, programming, a really useful way of doing things that I didn't even know about before I'd tried another language. I mean, I think any of those options, Python, Ruby, you know, I mean, server-side JavaScript, you know, in the form of Node, would all be pretty good options.
Yeah, I think the one deciding factor is going to be what is the best language for writing an API, because that's the main reason I want to learn another language. Because as cool as PHP is, I think an API on the back end is a fairly simple thing, isn't it? Really. Yeah. So I think that writing an API would be a good test on me learning a new language.
Well, I mean, the thing about an API on the back end is basically and we're encroaching on the territory of next week, but API on the back end is basically exactly the same as serving up a website using PHP, slightly more, close to the metal, but basically it's the same, except that the end view is JSON, for example, rather than HTML and CSS. I mean, it is almost as simple as that. I mean, you're not going to have to do, you still have to do login. It's in a slightly different form because you might have API keys and you might have rate limiting and using IPs and stuff like that. But basically, it's the same. You have authentication, you do some stuff for the database, and you output it to a view, except that the view is JSON rather than HTML. I mean,
exactly.
And you still have templating and stuff like that.
I have one more resolution. Oh, yeah. Well, I have a few more. But my next one is to just design more stuff, be it on pencil, on screen, spray paint, doing burnouts in particularly nice fashions. Not sure. But just design
spins.
More stuff. Of course,
like,
yeah. You've got to.
Doing, like, you can do the Olympic rings with your back tyres.
Challenge accepted.
Cool. I want a photo. Video or it didn't happen.
Yes. but yeah, I need to buy like a blank page Moleskine notebook and just have a pen with me all the time and try and just draw stuff, because I'm sure we all do it. You just see something, or you just get that momentary lapse of a moment of inspiration, and you just want to get something down. And so in my case, I would always get my phone out and try and draw it, but it'd never look as good because the definition on an iPhone is pretty shit compared to a pen. And yeah, and then at some point buy a tablet for Illustrator and just get all that stuff on screen.
Yeah, well, I am at work and at home, as in home being my parents' house, not where I'm living now. At work, my entire desk is like the top of my desk is glass, and at home I bought like a glass board and put it under my laptop. And then if you just have board pens sitting around, that is so good for just sketching out like the layout of your application or what you're going to do next, or even a to-do list. I just, I draw non-stop at work at the moment. I just like that backbone application I was talking about. It's quite complex in terms of modules because there's various things going on, and we're using this kind of message passing sandbox architecture where nothing talks to each other. They all go through a message system, and that makes it nice and modular, but diagrammatically quite complicated. And if you're trying to work out what's allowed to talk to what and what isn't, then you can get some quite complicated diagrams. But having the glass board and the board pens there, it just makes it so useful. And when you're talking to other people, if there's other people in the office, and instead of talking it through, you just draw it. It makes so much of a difference. You can say, I've got this idea for this thing. It looks like this. Bang, 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 and the idea is communicated so much better than you might have been able to describe it.
Yeah, a past agency I worked at, we had glass desks. Well, wait, glass desk, wooden desk, glass, wooden, and just so on. But I had a glass one, and I was for a project. I was sat next to an IA person, mm-hmm. and she was just trying to describe to me how something would work. She would just grab, in one case, a permanent marker, which is awkward. But she'd normally grab a board marker and just draw on my desk, and I'd get exactly what she meant. Mm. But yeah, they are quite useful.
Yeah. And the other thing I in my bag, this is going to sound really hipster now, but basically I've got my laptop and a Moleskine and a pen and my glasses, but basically a laptop, Moleskine and a pen. And so that means if I haven't got the glass board there, I just chuck it in my Moleskine. And when I was working at Buffer, I would always work with the Moleskine open on the days, kind of the current day, just to my right, and with a pen there so that I could just scribble things. And I kept a really good kind of to-do list or even a done list while I was working there, just keeping track of exactly what I'd done during the day and what I was going to do. And that was, that was really useful as well. And flipping to the back and just drawing a little diagram and then coming back and ticking, and when I'd done something, I'd tick it off the little list. And I'd almost use Markdown as a shorthand for separating it out days and things like that. And that kind of thing is really useful, as well, being able to draw stuff.
I love that you just admitted to writing Markdown on pen.
Oh, yeah, paper. Yeah. Oh, it's, but Markdown is, like, the greatest thing ever. And, I mean, it wasn't quite marked. Basically, I use hashes for titles, and that's about it, really. There's not much other Markdown.
Do you wrap links in square brackets and yeah. parentheses?
That would be quite useful.
I guess, but you could get away with doing a bullet point, a bullet list with bullet points, with stars.
Yeah,
you?
I mean, well, I do it with dashes and Markdown anyway, but so I just did that. Oh. They're the same.
Dashes.
Even.
What else is there?
I'm trying to think of other resolutions. Resolutions I had.
I got
Dave Rupert published. Do I mean Dave Rupert? I think I do. Published a load of New Year's resolutions. I think possibly even yesterday. I'm just going to have a look through that now because I read something on his and thought, oh yeah, that's a really good one. I might nick that.
Well, I've got a few small ones, just like wanting to have the settings files for things like Sublime Text, which is, you know, the editor I use, to have that in Dropbox. If I ever need to move to another computer to work for any lengthy period of time, I can just set up that application and link it to my preferences file, and it'll be the same anywhere I go. So to sort of cloud base my editing, yeah. I guess, but without using one of those horrible online IDEs. Yeah. Fuck that. Well,
I haven't. I think you're talking about Cloud9. I think it's the well-known one.
And coding with a K. Mm. That kind of thing.
Close to a certain other product.
Bastards.
Cloud9, I played with it a little bit and I wasn't that impressed, but I might give it another shot at some point. But the problem is I've got all the stuff set up on my computer. Like, I'm really familiar with my setup on here now, and it's and I'm tweaking it slowly over time, but it's really working for me. And And I don't think I could move to a cloud-based ID. I've just thought of something that's probably a good resolution, and even if I haven't set it now, I think I will at least try and do it, even if it's not an official resolution, which is to do stuff myself, or I was going to say do stuff yourself, but I'm supposed to talking about me, and I think it's kind of, instead of looking to see if there's a library for this when I'm trying to do something, it's to just do it and then see if there's a library. And it kind of links back to what we were just talking about. It seems that things that get, I mean, I'm not doing it to get well known, but it seems that things that get well known and get used and get popular and people like using are stuff that people have just built because they were solving their own problem. And I've noticed that what I've tended to do in the past is if something doesn't exist, and then I'll just be like, oh, I'll just wait for someone else to make that. I won't be able to make that. I won't be able to do that well. Whereas now I would like to actually give it a try and just, go for it. But, you know, if I want something to exist, then bring it into the world, build it. Build it, create it, design it, whatever it needs to make it happen. I'll just make sure I do it rather than go out and look for someone else's or use someone else's tool that's sort of for the right thing.
I can imagine many people will probably chime in here and say, but you're reinventing the wheel. But it reminds me of something I've said before in the past that I thought was quite profound, but no one really took it in notice of it. And I think my exact words were, we reinvent the wheel because the wheel is broken. Which in this case is probably true for you. I mean, you might be replicating a lot of another library, but if that one crucial part of it is broken, that's a missing part in the wheel. It won't turn properly.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe libraries actually a red herring. I mean, just as an example, I work on JS Bin, and fix a lot of bugs in that, and I'm getting more and more intimate with the front end code, at least on that site, and will be in the back end pretty soon, and JSBin does a lot. I mean, it has a lot of features, and there's a lot of hidden features that you know, I'll be looking through the code one day and then spot something that's a whole feature that I never knew was in there and is probably not documented. I sort of, it's a great, you know, it's a great tool and it does a lot of stuff very well. But in response, I wanted to make something that did absolutely nothing. And so I have this little tool that I call Edit at the moment, but I may never get released. I mean, it's just for me, which is just a code editor and a live preview thing. And it's built using Angular, it's sort of an Angular, you know, using Angular for a big project thing. It saves things to different, it just saves to local storage, but you can name your projects and it, you know, it has a sort of template thing and the URL live updates when you edit the name and blah, blah, blah. And it does all this stuff that, you know, and it just, for me, it's done the way, in my opinion, it's done right. It's done the way I would have done it if I'd built, say, JS Bin from scratch, which may not necessarily be true. If I had actually built JS Bin from scratch, I may have done it differently. And JS Bin is a product that wasn't built from zero because the first bits of it were the live preview stuff, but as soon as the console got added, that came from jsconsole.com. And it's this product that's been squished together to add more features to it, and you know, and that's absolutely fine. That's a way of doing it. But I wanted to build something that did if it was going to do everything, it absolutely had to do it in the right way. I'm trying to think through every interaction, every bit of code, every, you know, how everything talks to each other, and just make sure I'm, you know, and documenting it, and that. It goes to testing as well. I mean, I currently it's not tested because I just didn't think of that at the time. I wanted to get something out there because I felt like I'm just, you know, I was sort of learning Angular and I just wanted to do it. But that will come in time. I think I'm going to, you know, add unit tests and end-to-end tests and stuff like that. And it'll just be my response to an application that's quite big with something that's very, very small.
Yeah, I guess you're trying to have that the holistic approach. So when you build something, everything is done perfectly. You can walk away at the end of the day knowing if you get run over by a bus or something, that someone can pick up where you left off, and they don't need to talk to you in order to do so because everything's documented, everything's tested properly. Yeah.
Documentation actually is another classic example. It really frustrates me when projects don't have good documentation. I honestly don't see any reason, why projects aren't documented. If you wrote something from the start, there is no reason why you shouldn't be able to document it. If you came into it, you know, at a later date, I can kind of understand why. You know, that documenting it is a bit of a struggle, but if it's documented from the beginning and that's the, you know, the culture of a product, or if that's the culture of your team or the culture of, you know, your own culture when you're building your own stuff, then it just makes the project so much better. If you're writing about everything and commenting all your code I think it's almost respect for other people who might want to come in and help you. I mean, if you're publishing a, I mean, I don't mean this as like you specifically, just if one is publishing an open, you know, something on GitHub, you have a responsibility to the next, you know, person to come along and have a go with it, or maybe try and make some improvements to, you know, you have a responsibility to help them out, to make sure that they have they can do that and make your tool better. I mean, after all, that's what they're there for. I've come to open source projects before and wanted to make a difference and wanted to help, and the just documentation is non-existent, and I just get frustrated and I just don't add anything. You know, there's a regular expression website that sort of visualizes it. Visualizes the regular expression, and I was using it the other day, and there's a few things that I don't like about it. Like, for example, that the typeface that it uses in the regular expression box isn't monospaced, which means that backslashes and dots get merged, and backslashes and dots getting merged in regular expressions is not good because the difference between a backslash to dot and a dot is pretty big. And you know, and I just wanted to tweak that and generally make it look a bit, you know, spruce it up a bit, because it wasn't, it was clearly a programmer's tool for programmers, and I was gonna, you know, just give things a bit of a nudge and give it a better color scheme or whatever, and generally make it look a bit better. And there was just no documentation on how it was in Ruby, and there was no documentation on how to build it, how to run it, where things were, why things were how they were, and nothing like that. And I just gave up. I cloned, git cloned it, had a look around, and deleted it again, because I wanted to make a few small changes. I didn't have that much time, and the lack of documentation meant that I couldn't. And I just, you know, I just think it's respect for and a respect and sort of a thank you, a preemptive thank you to anyone who might want to come in and make your project better to write about it and help them do that, I guess.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it before, but I do completely agree, actually. And I'm guilty of building stuff and not documenting it at all. But I guess in my defence, I would, anything that I open source, I generally build just, you know, just for me. So I don't really need to comment it or anything, because the code is, because I've written it, I understand it, and it's fairly self-explanatory for me to read. But I guess, yeah, it would be good. And respectful to anyone on GitHub who uses it, and you know, anyone who takes on the projects in the future, that they don't need to actually, you know, understand what one function does to know what this, you know, what this model does.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. And actually, it's interesting the case of I won't document this code because I know what it does. I mean, I know I've come back to code that at one point I definitely understood, and I must have done, because I wrote it and it works, and looked at it and thought, I don't know, you know, I don't know what this does. I mean, code gets read 100 times more often than it gets written. And so, you know, if you have an if statement where it's not obvious exactly what's being, you know, if you have some quite complicated stuff going on in an if, and there's several different logical things, what I tend to, you know, just as an example of something easy to do straight away, is take that the logic out and put it into a variable. So, you know, so you call your variable is the first user and you know, is an administrator or something, and you literally call your variable is first and admin, and then in your if statement you just do if is first and admin and some, you know, some other variable name, and that means the person who comes to it can just look at the if and they know, we're going to jump in here if they're first user and they're an admin and something else, and you know, that kind of thing, it just makes the code, you know, if you're working on something and you don't want to, you're just trying to find a point in the code and you don't really care what the bit above is doing or what the bit below, you just need to find a certain point or just get an understanding of what's going on. That kind of thing just can make your life so much easier when you come to it, because you don't want to have to keep reading the logic, and you know, and your brain's not designed to carry out logical operations on variables. I mean, it's just not, like, we're not built to do that. So taking that work away and putting it into words like is admin and whatever else just makes life so much easier when you come to read the code, which you're going to do much more often than you are going to write it.
Yeah, completely agree. And I'll just admit that Coder is full of bits like that. I really need to go through and refactor a lot of it, comment a lot of it. And it was written in just raw PHP. There's no framework. But the only frameworks there are JavaScript frameworks, just, you know, a library and a couple of other stuff. But yeah, the server side, there's just no frameworks on it at all, and it really shows in the code. There's lots of bits that I can improve upon. But
yeah, I mean, yeah, it's funny stuff like that, because quite often that can be the case with products, is they manifest themselves as being, you know, looking consistent, looking stable, looking like, you know, they're very well programmed on the back end. And I'm not saying it's not bad, not well programmed. I'm sure it is very well programmed, but not looking like there's a, you know, products can look like there's a framework, like there's a consistent conceptual thing going on behind, when in actual fact there isn't, and there's a lot of things that could be optimized. I mean, I guess that's a counter argument to the using a framework thing, because you can get results just by, you know, doing it yourself, doing it without a framework, not necessarily worrying about whether you're doing it, you know, in the right way. But I think it's the same kind of thing. It's if you wanted someone else to work on Codery, would do you think they'd have a chance of being able to, you know, how quickly could they get up and running with adding a feature, how quickly could they, you know, could someone jump in at your index.php and follow through? I mean, would they need to follow through, or could they get an understanding of the whole application, you know, by just looking at your folder names or your file names or whatever else? And it's that kind of stuff. I mean, that
it's written the same way as people would write applications in like the late 90s or something. I mean, like the all the logic for adding a snippet in there is in addSnippet.php in the root.
Yeah.
So that's fairly easy to find, and it's just normal CRUD stuff when you get in there. There's nothing special about it. So, but yeah, it's not great. It works, and it's fairly solid.
But that's the important thing. Like, it works. So
yeah,
that's the important.
Moving on. I can't think of any more resolutions.
No.
Although now I say that, I'm sure as soon as we click the stop button, they'll all come flooding in. But
yeah, I know. Well, I suppose we can do a follow up in the next episode or something.
So it's almost time to end, unfortunately. But I guess as it's a good time to end, it would be a good time to talk about the future of the show and what we aim to do with it and how we're going to work it and all that kind of stuff. I guess it might be a good idea to talk about why we started this. I think it's pretty much my idea. Although everyone's wanted to do a podcast, anyone who's ever had a computer and a microphone has wanted to publish it somehow. We just wanted to talk about. We wanted to have a place to just bitch about the web and, you know, talk about stuff and feel intellectual for an hour or so. But at the moment, we're going to do this every 2 weeks. At the moment, if it gets more traction, then we'll do it. We'll do it weekly.
Or if we find we're really enjoying ourselves, even if no one's listening.
Yeah. I'm quite enjoying listening to my voice. It's probably going to help with one of my resolutions to not stammer so much. So we'll probably do this weekly, starting from next week. not kidding.
The plan is to get people who hopefully are well known, and also people who you maybe haven't heard of but probably should have heard of, just to give other people a platform to get themselves known, get themselves out there, and to be able to talk about the cool stuff they're doing. I mean, there's a lot of people building a lot of very cool stuff that's just not getting any attention, and we're going to try and get those people on as much as we can and talk to them and find out what they're doing and you know, show anyone who's listening or show the world what they're up to.
If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at Less Than Bang, and the website is lessthanbang.com as well. We'll be on iTunes, so you subscribe there and leave a review if you like.
That'd
be awesome. About 5 stars or in any 1 stars will get named and shamed
on the show. That'd be amazing.
As a matter of procedure, every 1 star gets a 5-minute rant. It might spin off into its own show, we'll see.